serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our eye-opening discussion with 95-year-old Dr. Fitzalbert Marius of Fresno, California, one of nearly a million African Americans who served in our armed forces during World War II.
I've talked to people who have said they felt that the African Americans who fought in World War II, whether they're, you know, flying planes like the Red Tails, the Tuskegee Airmen, or they're in segregated engineer units in Europe, or like you, this medical sanitation outfit in the Pacific, that what you all proved was, even though you weren't treated the same here in America, that you didn't have the same rights as other races, that what you proved over there was, if you could fight and die for our country, you deserved all those rights. You shouldn't be any other kind of citizen than the white citizens. Did you see that happen in the wake of World War II? Did you see things change? And do you feel that what you and those other black soldiers did had a role in it?
Yes, I'm sure it had some influence. But the amazing thing was this. When President Franklin D. Roosevelt died and Harry Truman took over, I became immediately depressed because here, this president was born in Missouri, a southern area. So there was no way in the world. Now, if I thought, you know, prejudicial things were running bad under Franklin D. Roosevelt, it was certainly going to be worse under Harry Truman. But to my amazement, Harry Truman removed discrimination from the armed force. I think Harry Truman did it because he had a heart change, personal heart change, and that's why he pushed it and did it. So he saw it was wrong, and he saw that all citizens should be treated exactly the same if they're going to sacrifice their lives for the country. So yes, he made a start for it. But remember, all of this went on, but it was not until you started to get to the times of Martin Luther King that you began to actively begin to change the civil rights situation. The greatest change in attitude came among the Southerners because the Southerners had a very definite anti-black attitude. And when their heart changed, they had something to change from. Now, this northern districts, where everything was subliminal, on the surface they said certain things, but underneath they were operating on a different level. So you still had subliminal, prejudicial things going on based upon economics and attitudes and all that sort of thing in the northern areas, which were harder to get rid of because they didn't start out the same way. It's like the Bible says when they talk about the church at Laodicea. God says, I'd rather you be hot or cold, not lukewarm, because I don't know which side the fence you're on. So, and it's the same thing. You got either be hot or cold. And like the book of James says, let your yea be yea and your nay be nay. No in between.
Well, I'm thinking about this now, and you described some of the things you went through in the military. Mm-hmm. And you said very frankly that you didn't expect to make it home from that.
No.
But you did. And that kid, that same young man who was hung upside down with his face in a barrel of oil about to die, would go on and become a pioneer in heart surgery. So how did that happen? Was it really your time in the military that turned your attention and focus toward a career in medicine?
Well, the real story is this. I got into it because of the ASTP program.
Right.
All right. It was economic thing. It wasn't coming from my heart. It was an intellectual decision.
You say, I can get through med school in half the time. Why would I pass that up?
And not have to work as hard as I have to if I'm doing it all on my own. Okay.
Which would have worked if you were white, which you were for a while, a few months.
Yeah, but under different circumstances. But when I got discharged in 1946 and went back to New York City, I went back to finish my last 2 years of college and pre-med, and I graduated in 1948. I applied to medical school, and the first year out, I worked all day as a tailor, and at night I went to Hunter College and took a course in medical illustration. Now, medical illustration is associated with what? Art. So I hadn't given up my art. At the end of the first year, some of my students came out and says, hey, Bert, how come you're not in medical school? You were, you know, top areas of the class. Did you apply to medical school? I said, yeah, I applied to medical school. Did you apply to Howard or Meharry, the two black medical schools? So I said, no. They said, where'd you apply? I said, well, I applied to Columbia and various, you know. They say, you know darn well them white schools ain't going to let you in. Well, I must have known it. I didn't want to go to medical school anyway. But they got on my butt so hard that to get them off my butt, I applied to Howard. The second year, I worked all day as a tailor. At night, I went to the New York School of Industrial Art and Science, and I took clothing designing. After about 2 months, I said, well, look, I really want to go into art. So I applied to École des Beaux-Arts, Université de Paris. École des Beaux-Arts, a school of wonderful arts, and it was the finest art school in the world at the time. And I got accepted. So I was on my way down with a letter saying, yes, I'm coming. And I had the letter. And I remember as I got to the vestibule, I remember I hadn't picked up the mail for yesterday. Inside the mailbox was a letter from Howard University. And the letter said, you have been accepted to medical school. Send a $50 retainer. Blacks at this time would jump 3 feet up in the air and say, Lord, I'm in medical school. Instead, I took my cap and a banged it on the ground and started cussing and said, God dog, now I got to make a cotton-picking decision. And I said, I'm not going to stress myself over this. And I got a silver half a dollar out of my pocket, and I flipped it. And I said, if it lands head, I'm going to medical school. If it lands tail, I'm going to Paris. And it landed heads. So I went all the way back upstairs, tore up the letter to Paris, wrote a check for $50, put it in the letter and a stamp on it, and mailed it. And I went to medical school on the flip of a coin. That was God working on my butt, not me. Because later I got to be thinking, I said, now, at this time, I hadn't given my heart and soul to Jesus Christ. I'm the only one standing in that vestibule. Now, why didn't I, since I wanted to go to Paris, when it landed down, heads, I said, oh, it landed just like I wanted, heads for Paris. Mm-hmm. I could easily say that. Why did I keep my oath? It was the Lord working on my butt in spite of me. Because if that hadn't happened, no way in the world would I wound up here in Fresno. No way in the world would I be part of working with Byron Evans in 1958 to start the first open-heart surgery here in Fresno. No way in the world would I have, after my wife had divorced me in 1966, would I have met my other wife, Dorothy, and become a Christian. She was part of the influence of me becoming a true Christian and giving myself truly to the Lord and Savior. None of that would have happened. Y'all would be paying big money for dressing up the clothing designed by Fitzalbert Michel Marius.
All the celebrities would be wearing it, right?
That's right. All the celebrities would be wearing it because I would have been the first black designer in the world.
I don't hear you complaining, though. And you mentioned the heart surgery, and you did help pioneer that here in this part of the world 60 years ago almost now. How many heart surgeries did you end up doing before you retired a few years back?
I can't count them. Thousands of them. 15,000 plus. Many of the heart surgeries, like, I know people still don't understand how do you do it. How do you stand up for 10 to 14 hours without eating, without going to the bathroom in one case?
Yeah, people don't understand that because it's so out of sight, out of mind. But it is probably both exhausting and exhilarating task to take on, but so much responsibility. Did that ever get to you, the weight of what you were doing, the life and death nature of this?
Well, for me, of course, it's part of my personality because the Lord has given me a personality from the beginning that when I get involved in something, I'm involved 150% in what I'm doing. When I get started on an issue, I say, now, is this subject of great priority, or can I put this one aside and something else is more prioritized at this time. I have to make those kinds of decisions, and I make those kinds of decisions all of the time. And what is great priority? Because one of the things that the Lord knows about me, and the Lord knew this because he has knowledge of all times, he knew that while Bert Maris was out in the world, I was 199% world. If I made you an oath, you could be sure I was going to keep it. I didn't tell you I was going to do something and didn't do it. And he knew the moment that I truly, with my heart and soul, turned my life and became submissive to the will of God, that same aspect of my personality would come into effect. And it has. The whole issue is people who have known me before saying, you ain't the same Bert Maris I knew before. I knew you when. I said, I'm glad you do. And I'm glad you remember. Because if the Lord can change who I was, he sure enough can change you. And then they shut up. Because I said, I don't deny what I was. But he changed me.
Are you saying the heart surgeon had heart surgery?
Oh, yeah. The heart surgeon had heart surgery. You see, like right now, I tell people, 4 years ago, I stopped being involved in physiological heart repair. And I'm 100% in spiritual heart repair. Mm-hmm. Now.
How old were you the last time you participated in a heart surgery?
Well, it was 4 years ago. So I was 91.
Did your patients know that?
Well, a number of my patients didn't understand. All they know, everybody was glad because, see, like even now.
Yeah, you're holding out your hand, and there is no tremor whatsoever.
Right, the hand's steady as a rock right now. Uh-huh. I could still be doing it right now. I've developed this attitude. If you do 100% of what you're capable of doing, then you don't have any stress or guilt to carry with you. Whatever I needed to do while I was at the hospital, I stayed as long as was necessary to take care of that situation as much as I could do with everything that I had. I never bothered to tell this to others, you know, because when I was assisting, like some would come up to me and says, okay, Bert, now I want you on this case because we're operating on the administrator of St. Agnes Hospital. And I want the very best for him, the best anesthesiologist. You one of the most experienced, and I want one of the best assistants, and so on down the line. Mm-hmm. I said, okay, I'll be there. But what I said to myself was this: they don't know who they're talking to, because every time Bert Maris steps up to that table, whoever is on that table is getting Bert Maris's best. It doesn't matter whether it's the president of the United States, the head of the Ku Klux Klan. If I give an oath that I'm going to take care of you, you want to get 100% of what I got. You say the best, as if the other people aren't getting the best. If it's a bum on the street, he's going to get the same thing the president gets.
I guess here's my question on all that. 55 years of doing these kind of heart surgeries and all those patients that you dealt with, the lives that they led after that, the gift of life you're able to give to so many. What are you most proud of when you think back on that medical career? What gives you the most pride or satisfaction?
Well, the most thing that gives me the pride and satisfaction is that I have come to the point that I understand that anything and everything that Bert Maris is able to accomplish, it is because God gave me the ability to do it. All that matters is whether I am doing it according to his will, not according to my own desire. I can't remember the very last time that I had any anxiety about anything. I'm not stressed out about nothing. I go to bed every night absolutely peaceful. One of my favorite scriptures is the 47th verse of the second chapter of Acts. After 3,000 were saved, it says, and the Lord added to the church daily. Remind old Bert Maris that no matter how much I teach, no matter how many sermons I might preach, how many books and manuals I write, I don't add one soul to the church. The Lord added to the church. Without him, none of this is possible. You know, being a poet and stuff, I pray this way. Thank you, Lord, for reminding me I'm Bert from dirt and would be completely inert if it were not for you. I thank the Lord for using me to further his kingdom in spite of my human deficiencies and inefficiency. That I'm not taking any credit for any of this myself. The only credit I've taken is the fact that I'm willing to submit to his will and be his steward and his messenger.
And my last question is, because we've talked a lot about the racial situation in this country, and you've seen it evolve over 95 years that you've been alive. Do you have any insight on that and the current state of racial relations in this country that maybe isn't being said out there that you think people ought to consider?
It all boils down to one thing and one thing only. You cannot change the circumstances and the situations without first changing the hearts of the people. We spend too much of our time prioritizing, correcting the symptomatology while ignoring the disease. We need to get to the disease. It's like drugs, for instance. We spend billions and billions of dollars on anti-drug actions. But stop and think about this. 30 to 40 years ago, a big drug bust was one that found 2 liters of heroin. Now today, it's a truckload or shipload of heroin. Is that an increase or a decrease? We spend them billions of dollars. Now we have more drugs coming in because we're not dealing with the disease. And the disease is why people want to use the heroin in the first place. We need to change their hearts. And that's true about many of the things that we're involved in. You wouldn't come to me as a surgeon. I say, oh, you got cancer of the colon. It's just in one place. Let me pray for you, and I'll give you something to make you feel better. You want me to cut your belly open and cut that sucker out and throw it away. Get rid of the disease, not the symptomatology. Uh-huh. And that's the same thing we're dealing with here.
That's the doctor's diagnosis. 95-year-old Bert Marius. He'll turn 96 in March, and he's not slowing down. He continues to teach classes at the Fresno School of Mission. He'll be speaking at a free men's breakfast at the Well Community Church in North Fresno this coming Wednesday morning at 6 a.m. And he also shared a few more of his anecdotes and opinions that we just didn't have time to include on the radio. So if you like, you can find that extra audio at hometownheroesradio.com. An artist, a poet, a tailor, an author, a scratch golfer, a musician, a groundbreaking surgeon, and of course, a veteran of the then segregated U.S. Army in World War II. I'm so thankful Dr. Marius could share with us all the different ways he's exercised his rights and privileges as an American, leaving us reminded once more, as we are each week on Hometown Heroes, that freedom is not free.